Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you to be back.
So, Ron, the latest in the polls.
Well, the latest in the polls continue to show nationwide that Kamala Harris, has a pretty decent lead, probably about 3.5 points, and it also shows that she has a lead in Michigan right now, which is an important state. But it shows that Trump is in the lead for 3 of those swing states, and another 3 of those of the 7 swing states are just about tied. So, so what it's beginning to look like, and I don't know if it ends up like this. There's other scenarios, but it's starting to look like the possibility of what we saw in 2016 when Hillary Clinton won the national popular vote, but Trump won most of the swing states. Now, it's unclear that Trump can win most of the swing states at this point. But he's carrying more of them based on polling, even though they're small margins, than Kamala Harris is winning at this point. So it could be a race that sort of ends up similar to 2016. The difference is that the Harris campaign, I think, will be campaigning full-fledged in these swing states, as opposed to Clinton's campaign 8 years ago, where they thought they were going to win the states and didn't really make the kind of effort they should have made.
You know the old adage, actions speak louder than words, and I've kind of seen a strategic shift for the Harris campaign, where obviously she is sitting down with conducting interviews, albeit friendly environments, right? So they announced the other day that she's going to be interviewed by Stephanie Ruhle over at MSNBC. I happened to watch Stephanie's appearance on Bill Maher the other day, and she said that it was absolutely ridiculous to expect Kamala Harris to have interviews or answer policy questions. And it was interesting because she says that she's running an other than campaign, and that's enough, that she's just telling folks the choice is obviously I'm running, you know, against Donald Trump, and you want an other than candidate, and I don't really need to explain much of anything to you. And it was really interesting because it's embracing the feeling of a party as opposed to citizen voters, right? I mean, that seems to be a void in all of these discussions. Your thoughts?
Well, of course, you know, the American people have a right to question candidates, to listen to what they say in speeches, but also what they say in response to questions. You know, anybody can stand up and read a written speech. What's important is that you have a candidate who has a thought process and a knowledge base that gives you confidence that they can handle big, difficult issues. I'm not saying that Harris can't do that, but I'm saying that by avoiding a lot of real interviews, it makes people wonder whether she can or not. You know, I had CNN on yesterday, and there was some people from a podcast talk asking her about when she goes to dinner with her husband, do they both sit on the same side of a booth, or do they each sit on an opposite side? And you know, that's fine, I guess, but that has nothing to do with, you know, wars in the Middle East or what,
Ron,
you know,
Ron, that wouldn't be top of mind for you if you had an opportunity to interview Kamala Harris?
No, it wouldn't, actually. I don't know if it could even reach my mind. Maybe that's why I wouldn't be a good interviewer.
Maybe why you're mystified by this whole happenstance.
Right. And it's wearing a little thin, I think. And it's one of the reasons, I believe, why even though she has built up a national lead, she hasn't built up the lead she needs or built up any lead for the most part, except for one or two states in these swing states. And it's why Donald Trump still has an opening to win this election.
She came out the other day. She was a staunch supporter of the filibuster, right, when Republicans were in control. Obviously, what a difference a day makes. And now she's saying that she's willing to sacrifice the filibuster in the Senate for the sake of Roe v. Wade. For me, it's just another consideration of her just being a chameleon. I mean, she's all things to all people, depending on the issue and the audience that she's talking to. When we say your values haven't changed, well, that's a value proposition, is it not? When you talk about, fundamentally the reason why there's a filibuster in the Senate?
Well, this is something we have talked about on this show before, and my position has always been that if the Democrats have control of both houses of Congress and the White House, or if the Republicans have control of both houses of Congress or the White House, they will bust the filibuster. And so I think if one party wins everything, I think we're going to see that. And even though Joe Biden was opposed to that, and Mitch McConnell, has been opposed to that, Joe Manchin has been opposed to that, other presidential candidates were, I think this time they're going to go do it. They're just going to want to pass what they want to pass and get done what they want to get done, and they're going to use every lever of power they have, and one of those levers of power is to go past the filibuster. Once they started making big exceptions to it, like for judicial appointments and other things, Supreme Court appointments like they have in the past, then it really didn't have much integrity to keep on. And all it took, now, all it takes now and in the future is going to be a big ideological push one way or another, and they'll knock it out. Because if you don't have a filibuster and you have a majority of the House and the Senate, even though they may be thin majorities, and you have a president, you can pretty much do what you want. And I think we have people in office now who want to do what they want. And the old traditions and rules, like the filibuster rule, they're just not going to care about us anymore. So I think we're going to see that. I think one of the guardrails that the Senate always had was something that, made a difference over time. But I think people are going to say that the heck with that now. We're just going to look, see what we're going to get done. We're going to get done as much as we can. And if we have to change the rules, we'll change the rules.
The whole system was set up to be deliberate, but not move too fast, right?
Sure, and sure.
Not be swayed by the overwhelming power of the majority in order to ensure that the minority has a voice as well, which is allegedly what they have stood for years and years and years, except when it doesn't work to their advantage. And this works, as it relates to both parties. But Republicans historically have talked about the elimination of the filibuster a lot less. In fact, to the contrary, they've been more supportive of the filibuster through the decades than Democrats. Let's talk about Trump. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, but let's not forget it was Mitch McConnell who made the last big exception to the filibuster.
Sure.
So when push comes to shove, if they really want an abortion bill, if they want a Supreme Court nominee, and that's either side, there's going to be enormous pressure to get rid of the filibuster. And people like McConnell, who was an institutionalist, who didn't want to make those kinds of changes on a whim, he was in effect pushed to do it because they absolutely needed to keep another Democrat appointment off the Supreme Court, you know, if they wanted to have a conservative Supreme Court, and he did it, and they succeeded. And I suspect you'll see the Democrats do the same thing on abortion. And at a certain point, they're just going to say, well, the heck with the rule. Let's just get rid of it and we'll pass what we want.
And I said then that that was going to be, go down in history as the biggest mistake that the Republicans ever made. Because they really can't, without being branded as a hypocrite, you know, start talking about the Democrats doing the same thing. You did it. You opened the floodgates. What goes around comes around. You know, you get your just deserved when you engage in that, you know, and it's going to turn out to be true. One of the things about the elimination of the filibuster that I think is going to be detrimental to this country, and I'd love to hear your thoughts. I believe we're going to enter an era of the most litigious times ever in the history of this country. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that's true. And when you can't get anything done in Congress, which very well could be the case if you have a president of one party and a Congress of another party, it's going to make it very, very difficult to get anything much done. As we've seen in the past, I mean, it's nothing new, but it would be the continued paralysis. And when you have that kind of paralysis, then people look for ways to get things done in other forums. And if you can't get it done in the House or the Senate floor, you get it done in a courtroom. You file suit. You put pressure on the judicial system, and you try to get judges to do what legislators would normally do. So, yeah, that's all very possible.
Donald Trump seems to continue to talk about tax relief as we start adding all of these provisions and recommendations up. I don't know about you, but I gave up trying to figure out the math. It just doesn't work. I don't know how we're not going to increase the national debt by just giving everything away.
Yeah, and I think one of the mistakes he's making on the tax issue is that he doesn't have a coherent plan. He can't say, look, I want to do these four or five things, and not only are we giving people some tax relief, we're also doing it, and we will do it in ways to build the economy, to expand opportunity and expand employment, or to do it in a way that holds inflation down by having some budget cuts that go along with the tax increases. So there isn't a coherent plan for it. And you know, I've sort of given up on all of these piecemeal tax proposals that both sides make, because I've learned over the years, if they cut taxes, raise taxes, or reform taxes, mine go up. So when they start talking about taxes, I get scared, because I know it's gonna hit me at some point. And I think a lot of voters no longer believe these promises and that they're going to get what supposedly they're going to get. Now I do think the taking taxes off of tips. Tip income was an artful thing politically to propose, that Trump originally proposed and Harris is now supporting as well, because it affects a lot of workers around the country. They particularly were concerned about the tremendous tourism and restaurant and hospitality industry in the state of Nevada, which is a key swing state. So there's the politics there, but how much can you give away for political reasons and then not, you know, notice where this national debt is going? I mean, we haven't heard any of these candidates talk about the national debt or talk about the budget deficit or reducing the budget deficit. It's not even an issue. I remember some years ago, people would complain, well, it's not a big enough issue. Well, now it's not even an issue at all. It's just like it's not even a problem. And we've got tens of trillions of dollars of debt that has mounted up. And we have a budget now that's got almost as much debt as it has actual, recurring revenue. So it's the whole thing is really disturbing.
What were your thoughts about what was done with President Zelensky the other day from Ukraine, bringing him to Pennsylvania and having him give a speech and start talking about U.S. foreign policy? I just really thought that was a dangerous proposition by the Biden administration to engage in that activity.
Yeah, I did too. You know, the whole war in Ukraine is it's a very delicate and sensitive topic. And even though the public has generally supported what Biden has done there, the support is pretty fragile, I think. And to look like you're playing politics with that is a very, very dangerous game. And the whole idea being that, you bring the president of Ukraine there, there's Ukrainians in a key swing state that's basically still tied in the polls, and hoping to make a case for more aid to Ukraine. But at the same time, he's pretty much making a case in support of Biden's policies, and I thought that was inappropriate, and I think it was a mistake for Zelensky to do that for his own purposes.
Yeah, because on the heels of that, we then had the president of Poland opining about our internal politics, being interviewed by I just lost her name. On PBS, I saw the interview, and it's like, here we go again. Amanpour, Christiane Amanpour.
Right.
It was like, wait, what are we doing? it's like we complain about others getting involved, right? Primarily Democrats, but it's them bringing them over here and getting them involved.
Well, it's everything is all politics all the time. And you were talking about hypocrisy a little while ago, and I was thinking to myself, well, most of these people don't care if they're called a hypocrite or not anymore. They just do what they want to do, and whatever they think is going to help them get elected or win the next election, they're going to do. And it's the same thing with that. Now the Democrats would argue that bringing in
Zelensky,
Bibi Netanyahu,
same thing.
Netanyahu to have a speech before Congress had political overtones that affected Democrats versus Republicans in the United States too. So I suppose the Democrats said, well, they got away with that. Let's see what we can do. And it's just getting too much. It's getting too much now.
Yeah, especially in light of the divisiveness in this country on these issues, right? It's going to be interesting to see where the landing is going to be in the end here, because once you open that door, to me, you normalize allowing others to speak openly and freely about our elections, but more importantly, or what's even worse yet, feel a level of comfort while they're sitting on our soil talking about our elections,
Sure, absolutely.
And I don't know about you, but that just creates a little discomfort for me. I'm probably not articulating it well, but I'm kind of, it's a head scratcher. I'm like, why are we doing this? This is not good.
Sure.
But anyway.
Yeah. No, the whole thing is dangerous, and the curbs are off. You know, it's getting to where you do whatever you can do to win, and you've already demonized your opponent and turned them into a devil, so that justifies doing anything you want.
Yeah. You know, and look, I understand it, that Donald Trump may have a position that's adverse in some fashion or form to some of their best interest over there.
Sure.
But what happens if that individual gets elected? I mean,
sure. Absolutely.
You know, I mean, that is our president, right? And if the public speaks, the public speaks. It could be interesting. Ron Fauché, as always, truly enjoy the conversation. Have a great weekend, my friend. Ron is the publisher of Lunchtime Politics. We'll be right back with Congressman Troy Carter when we return. Stay with us.